This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The city of Cincinnati is opening all 24 of its public pools this summer for the first time in 5 years. That's important for summer fun and public health. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says drowning deaths have been higher in recent years, and access to swimming lessons is an important way to reduce those deaths. Joining me now to talk about what it takes to keep pools open and how they can help save lives are Cincinnati Recreation Commission Director Daniel Betts. Thanks for sticking around, Daniel.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Oak Hills Swim and Racquet Club Board President Coy Baker. Welcome, Coy.
Welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Indiana University School of Public Health Bloomington Associate Professor William Ramos. Welcome back, Bill.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Great time to talk as I think the majority of the country is headed back to the water.
Yes. It is certainly getting to be that time of year for sure. Daniel, as I mentioned, Cincinnati is opening all 24 of its public pools this year, I think for the first time since 2019, right?
That is correct.
Explain the efforts that have gone into making this happen. This is not a small effort.
No, this was a heavy lift. COVID certainly impacted, I think, nationally, all our operations across the country. So Cincinnati was not immune to that, if you will. So this was a heavy lift. We went into it pretty much all hands on deck. We got support from both city council, the mayor, as well as city manager in terms of being able to kind of benchmark what other folks were doing as they came out of the COVID to try to attract lifeguards to reopen up pools across the country. And so some of the things we learned is that pay was certainly part of it. It wasn't all of it, to be quite frank. I think part of it is the environment in which young people are placed in to work, creating an environment where they want to come to work, creating an environment where they're getting trained properly to, be a support on the lifeguard deck. And so we were able to go from 2019, I think we did 11 pools. 2020, we bumped that up to 13. And now here in 2024, we're at all 24. We increased the pay for our lifeguards from $12 an hour to roughly $16 an hour for entry-level guard. And a seasoned guard can make as much as $18 an hour. And those things certainly impacted our ability. And we recruited. I mean, we just was everywhere. We were in the community, outside of the community, the suburb areas. We hit all the inner city areas. We went to just about every single swim meet that we knew of, and even went to some that we learned about on the fly. So I think it was recruitment, pay, and creating the right environment for these young people to be in to be successful.
Coy, we've been talking about the city-owned pools, but there are lots of club pools in the region, like Oak Hills Swim and Racquet Club. What are some of the challenges of opening those pools and keeping them going all summer?
They're the same. COVID killed us. Our membership's capped at 300 members, whether that's a family, individual, adult plus one. We used to call it empty nester. It's more adult plus one now. We were down to 84 members in February of 2019.
Oh my gosh. From
out of a 300
wow.
cap. We weren't sure we were gonna be able to open, all the restrictions, everything else. So that was tough. Private pool management companies, you know, they come in, some of them are great, some of them not so much. We were fortunate that we had had a company like that, and I think that was part of the decline. We hired a individual that had years of experience of running a private pool. We partnered with him. He's been with us for a few years now. He's fantastic. The people is the hardest part. And then with our membership pool like ours, we're member driven, member owned, member operated. If we don't have volunteers, I don't get paid. The 11 board members on our team, we volunteer for 3 years. I've been on for 7. My predecessor, who's my VP, has been on the board for 10. We just don't have enough people. And now that's our biggest challenge to this day. It's our most expensive cost.
Mm. Bill, you know, when I think of going to the pool, I think of fun and relaxation, but there's also this very important public health aspect. Talk to us about that.
Sure. And I always like to start all my messages with, you're exactly right. The pool is an awesome place to be, the water in general. You know, it's a great life affordance, and it gives us opportunities to engage throughout a lifespan, but it does come with a certain set of rules and an understanding about water safety that needs to be had. Your guarded facilities are your safest facilities. So kudos to everybody on the call. And Daniel, I know starting up that flow again that was cut off over COVID is not easy. So incredible to hear that all the pools are open. That's fantastic news. And we're hearing that across the country. But when it comes to unguarded spaces, lakes, rivers are often unguarded. Home pools are a big problem in the United States. So we need to make sure that people understand some basics around barriers to keep people from access and what supervision is around the pool and the high level or the high nature of supervision that's involved around the water.
And Bill, drowning deaths, as I understand, are more common among certain demographic groups, including Black people. What are some of the reasons behind that?
Yeah, so I think that's one of our biggest challenges right now. And if you haven't seen it, the CDC just came out with their most recent vital signs report on drowning, which showed drowning overall in the United States is up, something we definitely don't want to see and as a call to action after seeing decades of decline. But we continue to see it's not an even playing field. So as you mentioned, Black Americans, African Americans tend to have higher drowning rates, sometimes for young males, five times as high as the average population. We need to know more about why. We definitely think access and opportunity is part of it, but we also think there's some cultural reasons, maybe historically not having felt welcome to facilities. And just through history, it's not part of the general narrative in some populations. We also see from the data that the American Indian, Alaska Native populations are seeing an increase in drowning as well.
We're talking about what it takes to keep pools open and the importance of swimming lessons for public health. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Daniel, why did city officials place such an emphasis on having all the pools open this summer?
Well, I think some of it is based off what we just heard, right? So in our community, we realize that, you know, access to pools is an amenity and a privilege, right? And we want to make sure that everybody gets equal access across our city to that opportunity. One of the things we did and the city totally was behind is we created an academy for young people, particularly African American and Latinos, to be where we are paying them to learn to swim, if you will. There absolutely are some challenges culturally in terms of particularly with young African-American girls who we have not developed a swim cap that does not sweat out their hair. And so we find that something as simple as that will be a deterrent for an African-American female to even come through our academy or join up for our academy to learn to swim. But we're approaching that and have been strategically like setting up this academy. We started this academy last year. We started with a pilot of 50 young people, and 25 of them became actual lifeguards. So we got a 50% track rate of actually converting young people who never knew how to swim, came to us like with no swim background at all. We hope to continue that effort because it is important. Mm.
And Coy, we've talked about personnel and how complicated it can be for you to get the volunteers you need, the members you need, the staff you need. But maintenance expenses don't go away after Labor Day or whenever you close down. Talk about how that complicates what you need to do.
Well, I was quoted earlier in the year in another publication. We're open 100 days a year. We have 365 days of bills. We don't own the property. We own it, but we had to refinance to get us out of some administration faux pas from years and years and years ago. So the property's been refinanced. We have a mortgage on the property. The property's value is through the roof, but you know, we have to pay for that. We have property taxes, insurance, we have employment tax, we have workers' comp, all things that we have to pay all year round. We do have a manager full time for the entire year that kind of handles property management when we're gone. You know, when we're closed down, he's up there regularly checking, so we pay him year round. You know, we have gas electric that we don't turn that off. We have a winter we have paddle courts that are a platform tennis, and it's a winter sport, so we have access. We have a team of ladies that play all winter long. And, you know, we have to heat a building for them to have access to indoors. So we have a lot of extra expenses. And then, you know, we fortunately offer concessions. So, you know, we have food costs and everything like that. And but we have to go through all the inspections and just like everybody else. So if we don't have our ducks in a row, we don't open on time. And then when you don't open on time, you got members that aren't happy at our place because they're paying for a membership. And, you know, the pools are old. Our pools, it's 60 plus. It's old. We have things that come off and we have to put them back together, and filters and pumps and mechanicals that break down. And, you know, hey, we could do the best job of winterizing the pool in the world. We don't know if that thing's going to work the day we turn the filter on. Yeah. And that's just a problem.
Yeah, Mother Nature sometimes has other ideas for you, I'm sure. Daniel, I know the city over the years has replaced some pools with spray grounds. Talk to us a little bit about the reasoning behind that.
I think it's just based off what you just heard. Some of it is we have an old infrastructure and it's far cheaper to create a spray pool in a community than a full-size pool. So I think some of it is about cost, and it was also... CRC, prior to me, did a study, strategic plan study, and looked at all the pools across the city. I think we had, at one point, we were at about 44 locations across the city. The National Parks and Recreation Association has a actual a system of what, or I should say a benchmark of where you should be in terms of number of pools based on the size of your community. So we started looking at size of community also, because we literally had pools like bumping up against each other. So we went from 44 to roughly 24, which is what we have now. I think that hope that answers your question, mm-hmm. related to,
yeah.
why we kind of moved away from, we're not building more pools. We feel like we have enough pools in our community. We have the 24, and then we have a total of 6 spray grounds, and they're spread out throughout the 52 neighborhoods. So everybody has a little bit of something. So if you don't have that pool in your backyard, you certainly have, a spray ground.
Yeah, and I imagine those must be easier to maintain and all that.
Far easier to maintain. I think the other thing that oftentimes gets lost in the conversation, whether you are for-profit pool administrator and or nonprofit or city entity, pools typically are not set up to make money. They're not money driven. They're usually money pits for the most part. But they are a good amenity. And here in Cincinnati, they're one of the top 3 things that people fixate on in terms of what we do. So our goal is to do it well. I want to just real quickly mention that we also do a lot of lifeguard classes around swim lessons, swim teams, because again, our goal is to get as many young people early to learn to swim so that we, again, address that issue of, you know, reducing the level of swim tragedy
drowning deaths.
Yeah.
We got an email who writes, I live in Dayton and I'm a taxpayer in Montgomery County. As such, I am upset to see the lovely tax-supported pool, I guess, at Sinclair Community College sitting empty. School children should be learning to swim, and teenagers and others could train to be lifeguards and junior lifeguards. We don't have anybody here from Sinclair Community College, but that's certainly, I would imagine that there are some expenses with keeping that staffed and open all year round, too. Bill, you mentioned that CDC report that was released, I think, last month, and it said one thing that jumped out at me was that more than half of all adults in the U.S. haven't taken swimming lessons. What are the implications of that?
Yeah, absolutely. That one really surprised me as well. And we know people do informal swim lessons, maybe learn from a parent or a relative, but really the formal swim programs are the ones that are designed to make sure the kids are really learning in a progressive order, and that they're also getting water safety education as well. So we have research that shows that people who take formal swimming lessons do have kind of a buffering effect on a drowning, either fatal or non-fatal drowning event. So it's important. And again, just knowing how to access the water safely is an important life skill. And I think we need to try to bring that up in the United States as a typical narrative with starting with children. We typically think of starting with kids, just so it's just part of the normal process for a child, learning to talk, learning to walk, learning about traffic safety, all kinds of hazards. And then having the skill around learning to swim is just part of that typical narrative. And one other note I'll make is one of the other statistics that went up 19% was those 65 and older, specifically 65 to 74. And I think older populations are important for us to start focusing on, especially if they're seeing this increase. But also, we often have to sort of break a cycle. So if there's a fear of swimming, or you know, swimming's just not on the radar for certain families, if we can teach adults to enjoy the water, then they will pass that enjoyment down and that conversation will become normal.
There was a loud public outcry here locally over the decision to close Sunlight Pool at the former Coney Island. I know nobody in the studio was responsible for that or involved in that. But do you think the closing of Sunlight made it easier for either of your pools to get lifeguards or staff? What do you think, Coy?
I'm fortunate that most of my guards grew up there as members. We're in a super unique position over on the west side. Everyone grew up there. So almost all of our employees at one point had family members. Either they were members when they were kids, they're still members or whatnot. So I think it was easier for us. I don't think it really had much of an impact. I know maybe out east, side was probably a little bit, probably more helpful.
Yeah. What about for CRC?
I'm thinking it probably had an impact. It helped us recruit more guards who probably wasn't thinking about us and didn't see the city as an option. To the extent of what number and what percentage, I don't have that now. But that's something, it's funny you mentioned that, because that is something that we're looking at. And we're going to do that through addresses and, you know, who signed up, who's new, because we got a whole new slew of guards this summer. So we'll take a look at that and see exactly what level of impact. But my guess is that it had some impact. Hmm.
Bill, we were talking about, you know, how many people don't take these formal swim lessons. What are the barriers that prevent more people from learning how to swim, either as children or adults?
Sure. We're getting better at understanding the barriers. And we actually just did a study through Indiana University, the American Red Cross, in conjunction with the CDC. Some of the things that kind of surprised people, we saw, you know, cost was a barrier. But one of the things that rose to the top that might surprise those providing the programs was just the schedules don't match what the parents need or the caregivers need. So, you know, we've kind of put out a call to those providing service providers, those in parks and recreation, to really know what your community is up against. So parents with multiple kids who can't get them all there at the same time because it's not scheduled that way, or programs that don't match up to accommodating other extracurricular activities or work schedules. So we're really encouraging providers to do kind of a needs assessment and get to know your populations and what their true barriers are. So those are some of the things. We also know, I think Daniel mentioned teenagers, there's a level of being uncomfortable just in swimwear around other teens. So how do we work around that? And then kind of this culture of fear that might also be present. So those types of things we need to know that exist and how to navigate around.
Daniel, that level of feeling comfortable in swimsuits, does CRC have rules that prevent young people from wearing like t-shirts over their swimsuits or something like that that might make them more comfortable?
No, we've laxed our rules over the years, to Bill's point, to be quite frank, because of those issues. So our reluctance to have young people in gear really relates to the chemicals in the pool. So we're not going to have you wear blue jean cutoff shorts. If you show up and you don't have the proper swim attire, we have extras that we give to the community with no cost associated with it. So we don't think that that's our issue. Our issue really is probably it's going to be around maybe that cost factor a little bit. It's going to also be around the cultural factors of traditionally, I think, African-American and Latinos in our country were left out of pools and out of public spaces. And so there's a catch-up game that needs to take place. And so we're hoping that our Life Academy will help us with that catch-up game.
Coy, as you look ahead, looks like you're not going to get out of that president's job anytime soon with as long as you've had it. What do you see as the biggest challenges of opening that pool year after year, summer after summer?
It just goes to the unknown. You know, we talk about water being scary, but it's also destructive. The pool stays filled all year. We have to keep it full to keep it the pressure from it collapsing. If we leave it empty too long, it will fall in on itself. So we open the pool, we have to drain it a month or two before, we have to clean it, scrub it. Like, it's a all hands on deck effort, and our manager does a great job, but he's, you know, we don't know until day one when we turn that filter on, and then we just cross our fingers and pray that everything's going to go smoothly, that something's not going to explode, that we're not going to have a pump malfunction, things like that. So mm-hmm. That's the biggest challenge.
Yeah. Okay. And Bill, with just like 10 seconds left, what's the most important thing people need to keep in mind when it comes to safety around water?
Yeah. Again, final message would be the water is amazing. Get out, learn how to use it. Just learn how to use it safely. If you have children, it's about barriers that work and are effective. And then making sure you have high level supervision, because kids will do amazing things and have all kinds of ways to get away from you.
Yep. I've been talking with Cincinnati Recreation Commission Director Daniel Betts, Oak Hills Swim and Racquet Club Board President Coy Baker, and Indiana University School of Public Health Bloomington Associate Professor William Ramos. Thank you all so much for your time today. This has been Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.